From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine on New York State government and politics. Your host is Dave Galletly, with commentary by political scientist Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University of New York at New Paltz.
Coming up this week, New York prepares for the possibility of layoffs as the state budget deficit grows. A challenge is underway for the minority leadership of the state Senate. And is there a challenge for the leadership of the Republican Party? Those stories and much, much more on this week's Legislative Gazette. One week after elections, New York has found itself in the same position it was during April's lengthy budget negotiations, in debt. Before the elections, Comptroller Ned Regan estimated a cash deficit of about $200 million. That total has since ballooned to about $700 million. Following the defeat of the Environmental Bond Act on Election Day, the state found itself several more million dollars in the red. New York had already started spending money on some of the projects specified in the act, thinking the issue would pass. Now, with a deficit estimated at over $800 million, Governor Cuomo and legislative leaders have been meeting to discuss the deficit. The governor told our Alan Shartok layoffs are likely.
There will have to be layoffs. There is no question about that. The number is uncertain. Let me tell you how I feel about layoffs. Terrible. So does every legislator. I don't know anybody who can be pleased at the notion of putting people out of work. I have read many, many glib editorials from people who say that the public servants don't work hard anyway, and you have swollen lists, and you have too many people at work. I have never believed that, and I don't agree. And when you see people changing bedpans in mental institutions, and you see a lot of people working for very, very low wages, doing work that most people in this society wouldn't even go near, taking care of elderly people whose bodies have to be cleaned because they're not able to do it for themselves. And when you try telling me that these are people who don't really work hard and they take lunch hours that are too long, well, I don't have a whole lot of patience with that. And I've been in the private sector most of my life, so I know all about private corporations and private businesses, and I ran private businesses, and I know how they work too. And the comparison between that and public service is a very favorable one to public service. Well, knowing all of that, and knowing that the business we're in is not making profits for ourselves, but in helping the whole community, we do it imperfectly, absolutely. Sometimes here and there, a person might even do it corruptly. But that's what we do for a living, is try to help other people. Now, firing such people, laying such people off, is not easy to do. It's not easy for them, and it is not going to be easy for the community at large. You have heard people say over and over, reduce the spending. You've heard me say it, Alan, on the show. Mm-hmm. We've got to control the spending. You've heard me express my gratification that Ralph Marino finally agreed this year not to spend a penny more than I asked for. You've heard me say that the legislature spent $1 billion more than I. You've heard all of that. But now you're going to see spending restraints and cuts like nothing the people expected. And while they cheered us on to spending cuts, I wonder if they will cheer the cuts when finally they are announced, when their hospital, their school, their roads and bridges don't receive what they feel they should. That is going to be an interesting moment of truth in our society. Now, what we're going to try to do is keep the layoffs to the lowest number possible. We're going to try to cut the budget in a way that does not hurt the people already in need, the people already vulnerable. We want to try to do it keeping alive our mission, which is to educate people, to house people who without us would have no shelter, to help people who, because of the way God permitted them to be born or to grow, they can't deal with the simplest concerns and problems of everyday living and have no mother or father to do it, no aunt or uncle, no philanthropy, no foundation, no point of light that shines on them and attends to them. We have to take care of those people. That's government. We have to keep that mission alive while still cutting a huge amount of money out of the budget. And the way the process works, the legislature and I met about a week ago, and the leaders said, Mario, you go first, please. Tell us what you would do. You know, that's okay.
Do you think that they're up? Do you think that they understand the enormity of this and are more
Absolutely.
Willing to be statesmanlike than usual?
Well, I'm not going to say that they haven't been statesmanlike in the past. I will say that both the Assembly under Mel Miller and the Senate under Ralph Marino have gone to the voters and won return to office, it appears, by telling them that they were not going to raise taxes and they were going to cut spending and they were going to cut it big. And they said it even more clearly than I said it. So there is no question about their political position, which is cut spending. You will recall that last year the Republicans said they could cut $2 billion out of the budget. Remember?
Yep.
Now they'll have their chance.
Well, when the unions...
So let's get this clear. The Republicans said they could spend $2 billion. They could cut $2 billion. Now they will have their chance. I don't think we're going to have to cut $2 billion. I hope not. Immediately, we don't have to cut anything like that from the current budget. But I will propose cuts that meet the needs. I promise to do it. I think that is the leadership role I should play, and I will play it. And the legislature is eager to see me play it, and that's all right with me.
Governor Cuomo speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Alan Shartok. Sources estimate the number of state workers to be laid off at 10,000, and that's a minimum. The governor has asked the state's various departments to come up with other cost-cutting measures as well. Our Mike Fondacaro discussed the economic impact of the state's budget woes with Hugh Johnson. Johnson is chief investment strategist at First Albany Corporation.
No, obviously can't leave a good taste in anybody's mouth. Of course, we have to keep in mind that some of the problems that we face are certainly not the fault of, you know, poor fiscal management on the part of the state. That's really, we're in a very difficult economic environment. The financial services business, which is so important to New York State, is having its difficulties, as we all know. At the same time, I think it's important and very important to keep in mind that I think the rating agencies have essentially recognized what we talked about a week ago, and that is it's not as though the state of New York is trying to brush its problems, its fiscal problems, under a rug or to bury its head in the sand. The state is clearly facing those problems and taking steps in order to try to get its fiscal house in order or to respond to the challenges of a very difficult economic environment. So I think the agencies are basically recognizing that we are taking steps in this state to do the right things.
What about the $300 million in bonds to be sold on Tuesday? How do you think this will work out in the end?
I think by and large, you know, I think it's good news that the rating agencies are not going to, or certainly not threatening, to downgrade or reduce the credit rating of the state of New York. Insofar as that cloud has been removed from the minds of many investors, and insofar as the financial market environment, the credit market environment, the bond market environment is pretty good now. Bonds have been doing well. There's the belief that the Federal Reserve is going to lower short-term interest rates after their meeting. So I think given those two, that combination, that I think that the bond sale is likely to go fairly well. There's good demand for bonds in the marketplace. And as I say, that dark cloud of the reduction in the state's credit agency or credit rating seems to, at least for the time being, have been removed.
Do you think that will help facilitate the negotiations, the dark cloud, as you put it, being removed? Do you think that will facilitate the negotiations once the legislature and the governor's office gets back to work on trying to eliminate this deficit?
I think the negotiations this year, they were difficult last year. I think the negotiations this year, when we're talking about next year's budget, we're talking about the 91-92 budget, I think the negotiations are going to go more smoothly. I think that people are now really have much more realistic expectations or forecasts for what the economy, et cetera, are going to do. And I'm looking for a much more congenial working between the various, the Senate, the Assembly, and the governor's office. In other words, I'm looking for a much better environment, a greater spirit of cooperation in a very difficult environment. It seems like we're headed in that direction.
Hugh Johnson of the investment banking firm First Albany Corporation speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Mike Fondacaro. When the Environmental Bond Act was defeated, there was already money collected to pay the interest on the bonds. Now that there's no bond issue, where will the money go? The state says it will go to the deficit, but two assemblymen say the money should go elsewhere. Lee Farben has this report.
Two Capital District assemblymen are upset about where the money's going. In the past 10 days, both have called for either repealing the tax or having it fund solid waste programs. Columbia County Republican John Faso thinks the money should go to localities. The tax that brought in the interest comes from an additional fee on soda and beer purchases. And Faso thinks the money should serve a more useful purpose than plugging the state deficit.
The people, I think, would be surprised to find out that even though they killed the Bond Act, the taxes that were supposed to pay off the principal and interest of the Bond Act are still alive. And I guess in a time-honored Albany fashion, the Bond Acts may come and go, but taxes never change. And here's a prime example where I think we should be up front with the people and either repeal these taxes or take the proceeds from these taxes, if we can't repeal them and we can't muster a majority to repeal them, take it and use it for solid waste.
Meanwhile, Rensselaer County Republican Neil Kelleher has been echoing Faso's statements. He estimates the money coming in from the tax amounts to over $100 million each year.
Obviously, I'm very disappointed that once again we have a serious question of ethics as it concerns the handling of the fiscal responsibilities of the state by the governor's office and by the people who manage his budget. This tax, which in and of itself was questionable when it was passed, because it was passed to pay for interest on bonds for a bond issue that hadn't even been considered yet. Well, what's happened, of course, is that once again they tripped over their skis, so to speak, because the bond issue failed and they're still collecting the tax. My request to the governor still, I think, makes a lot better sense. Either repeal this tax, or put it in a special fund to help these small communities close their landfills and get on with recycling programs. I think using this tax for a purpose other than what it was specifically identified for is not being honest with the taxpayers of the state of New York, and it's small wonder that that they raise their eyebrow and question the reputation and behavior of the people who are supposed to be managing their affairs here in Albany.
Rensselaer County Republican Neil Kelleher. The solid waste issue has been a big one for the past few years, and many are predicting some heated debate when budget negotiations begin for the next fiscal year. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lee Farbman.
Manfred Ornstein has been the state Senate's minority leader longer than fellow Democrat Martin Connor has been in the Senate. But Connor says he'll challenge Ornstein for his leadership role. Connor feels Ornstein has devoted too much of his time to his law practice and not enough time to the Senate. Our Brian Shields took some time to discuss Connor's hopes to become an minority leader with the New York Post's Fred Dicker.
Okay, Fred, I believe you were one of the first, if not the first, to report that Manfred Ornstein, the Senate minority leader, is facing a challenge. When the dust clears and all is said and done, do you think Manfred Ornstein will still be the minority leader of the state Senate?
It's too early to tell. Ornstein has been in the minority leader's position for 16 years. That's an awfully long time. He's gone through 8 election cycles. And each time he's been unable to put together the combination of things that would have been necessary for the Democrats to take control of the state Senate. There's no question many Democratic senators are very disappointed that the Democrats failed to take the majority this year, and I'm sure many of them are prepared to take their disappointment down on Manfred Ornstein, but it's still too early to see whether Ornstein, with all the influence he still retains, is going to be able to successfully beat back the challenge. I would note, though, that in this political game, which is a tough game that's played in Albany, you don't normally get a challenge to a leader of the legislature unless the challenger has a pretty good sense that he or she has a chance to succeed. Marty Connor wouldn't be publicly challenging Ornstein now, in my judgment, if he didn't think he had a shot at defeating him.
What about Senator Ornstein's legal problems during the past few years? He's been under indictment. It's gone to the courts.
Sure.
Does that play a role in this challenge?
It does. Ironically, I think to outside observers, it has helped Ornstein to some degree, notwithstanding the fact that he's charged with hundreds of felonies. Many of his fellow Democrats feel sorry for Ornstein and are sympathetic to him because, in part anyway, he's charged with these crimes because of activities he undertook trying to take control of the Senate for the Democrats. So there's a sympathy feeling that we shouldn't kick out Ornstein now because he's got all these legal problems, and he has them in part because he was trying to help the rest of us Democrats.
What kind of arm-twisting or deal-making will be going on behind closed doors? Will Ornstein be saying, look, I'll give you this if you stand by me? Connor, will he be doing the same?
Correct. He'll also, Ornstein, because he's in power, will also be suggesting to people, either directly or indirectly, that they will lose this or they'll lose that, or they'll be punished with fewer staff members if they go against him. One of the reasons now that you're not seeing too many senators publicly expressing support for Connor is that those senators, and I know some of them, are afraid that if they go public and, on behalf of Connor and Ornstein loses, then and Ornstein wins, then they'll be punished. So what some of the lawmakers are saying publicly isn't what they're saying privately for fear of retaliation.
Do you see Governor Cuomo or Assembly Speaker Mel Miller taking sides in this?
I don't. You know, there's a kind of an irony here. One of the fallouts of the setback that the governor suffered in the election last week is, in fact, this challenge to Ornstein. It was Governor Cuomo, after all, who invested a lot of his resources in trying to help Ornstein take the majority of the Senate, and of course the governor didn't do well in the election, and he didn't carry anybody with him. He didn't carry the bond issue either. So no, the governor will stay clear for a bunch of reasons, not the least of which is that he really, doesn't want to be seen to be allied with a guy who was under multiple indictments for political corruption.
Fred Dicker of the New York Post with our Brian Shields. Another struggle may be ensuing across the aisle. Senate Majority Leader Ralph Marino says he's not comfortable with the Republican Party's current leadership, meaning party head J. Patrick Barrett. What does this mean for Barrett, and what are the implications of Marino's statements? Our Mike Fondacaro discussed that with State Conservative Party head Michael Long.
Well, I think that's something that the Republican Party themselves are going to have to settle. I really don't take a posture on what the Republican Party structure should be. I think the Republican Party for sure has to take a deep look at themselves and try to figure out in which direction they're going to head. I think that's one of their problems. They don't know where they are or what they stand for. And I think the voters reflected that also. And I think they have some internal problems that they personally are going to have to settle themselves.
How much do you think the candidacy of Herb London had to do with these calls from Senator Marino?
Well, let me tell you, I mean, Pat Barrett, I know for a fact Pat Barrett was willing to support Herb London for governor. It was internally that the leaders in the Republican Party, and I don't know all of them, said no to Pat Barrett about Herb London. And that was mainly because Mr. London was, one, pro-life, and two, he didn't seem to have enough money for the campaign. They evidently got a pro-choice candidate, but they also got a candidate that said he was going to put money into the race and never did.
New York State Conservative Party head Michael Long, speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Mike Fondacaro. New York State's Insurance Department is continuing a court fight to prohibit insurance companies from requiring AIDS tests as a prerequisite for some kinds of insurance. The State Court of Appeals heard the case this week, and Karen DeWitt filed this report.
Currently, insurance companies in New York State are allowed to require an HIV blood test for people who want to purchase an individual or small group health insurance plan. The state insurance department has been trying for 3 years to prohibit the practice because, says spokesman Kevin Foley, if the person tests positive for the HIV virus, that person could be unfairly excluded from access to health insurance.
Is that appropriate for saying that even though you may not be sick for years to come, starting right now, you will not have access to health insurance coverage? So if you have appendicitis or a heart attack or any number of other diseases, you won't get care because you're HIV positive. At this point in time, we don't think that that's a reason for excluding people from a system that already excludes a lot of people.
Treating a person with AIDS is extremely costly because those who get the disease develop numerous illnesses as their immune systems break down over a period of years. And the insurance trade group, Health Insurance Association of America, has been fighting the state insurance department in court. In August of 1987, the insurance department promulgated a rule prohibiting the AIDS test and prohibiting a prospective insurer from even asking about results of an HIV test on an insurance application. The regulation was almost immediately challenged by the trade group, and two lower courts have agreed that the ruling went beyond the insurance department's authority. Foley says by requiring an AIDS test, the insurance industry is not taking into consideration the special problems associated with a person's testing HIV positive, such as the social stigma it can bring, or the fact that denying someone health insurance is tantamount to denying them medical care.
If you don't have health insurance in today's society, you don't have health care, except under extraneous or poverty circumstances.
A spokesman for the Health Insurance Association says there's no data on how many health insurers require the HIV test. No one at the association familiar with the court case was available for comment. Foley says the insurance department has received complaints from people who have been turned down for health insurance because they test HIV positive, but he says people who find out they have the antibodies that can lead to the disease of AIDS are often reluctant to talk about it.
If one has gone to an insurance company, been tested and turned down, and one thinks it's and is told that's the reason, people don't want to go around complaining about it. They don't want people to know, and they're looking for a way to get health insurance coverage.
AIDS tests are not required for large group health insurance plans, the kind that most New Yorkers who work for corporations and government agencies are insured under. And Foley says insurers are not allowed to require that only some people applying for small group or individual health insurance plans be tested for AIDS.
Current insurance law would prohibit them from picking and choosing who they were going to require to test. You have to test, if you do use the HIV test in any circumstance, you have to be consistent in your use of it. You can't say, well, I think this person may be positive, so I'm going to give them the test. That's prohibited by insurance law. What we're seeking to do is prohibit the use of it at all. What they're seeking, and the courts to date have upheld them, is the right to use it generally.
The Court of Appeals will issue a decision in about 6 weeks. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Karen DeWitt's report, courtesy of the New York Public Radio Albany Bureau. Joining us next is our political analyst, Dr. Alan Chartok. I spoke with him earlier to talk about the layoff situation. Will 10,000 state workers hit the streets?
As a matter of fact, David, it could conceivably be much higher than 10,000 we are now hearing. In the past, there have always been these advance warnings of dire consequences as a result of a budget shortfall of some kind. Quite frequently, the unions get involved. It becomes almost a negotiating posture. The unions then work with the executive branch, and somehow, by attrition and other mechanisms, the dire consequences are avoided, and that may happen to some degree here. It has in the past. However, I am convinced that the budget shortfall is a result of the lack of tax revenues coming in, which are nothing more than a manifestation of the kind of recession that the Northeast is in right now. We know that. And when I spoke with the governor about this, he made it plain that we're just online first because of our budgetary process and that a lot of others would be checking in with identical sorts of problems. However, remember that Mario Cuomo's base constituency, when he got elected and subsequently, have been the unions. Oh, they're always willing to yell at him and to defile him and to talk about how bad it is, but in the end, they always stand behind him, and it is a very difficult thing for a governor to turn on his own constituency and say no. The problem, of course, is that the Republicans are so convinced by their own rhetoric that state government has to be cut, and the governor is convinced that that's the mood of the public, that he's saying he's going to go along with that. But he's also saying, don't come to see me when there's nobody to carry a bedpan in your hospital or in a public hospital as a result of this. And so I think it is clear that in the beginning of this third term that he will take his medicine as fast as he possibly can and just sort of hope that things get better. And I wouldn't be one bit surprised to see state government taking advantage of certain abilities to kick out some old dead wood out of some of these departments to make cuts. At the university, I know that when times like this happen, very often the political agendas of various college presidents will be met by eliminating certain departments they've never wanted around in the first place and getting rid of some of the deadwood that they never had an excuse to get rid of before at a time when in state government you just shouldn't fire. Very bad form, very hard to do, and you need incredible mounds of evidence. This presents a rationale for doing it all quite simply.
Okay, switching subjects for a moment, Fred Ornstein, the Senate minority leader,
Looks like he may have a fight on his hands.
He does have a fight on his hands with a man named Martin Connor, who has always been one of the guys, one of the backbenchers. The problem with Connor is that he is not in line for leadership. The people who are in line for leadership are Don Halpern, Donnie Halpern from Sheepshead Bay, and Emmanuel Gold from Forest Hills, Manny Gold. They are not going to be happy about this way back bencher trying to do a leapfrog into the top. So my bet is, as has always been the sort of classic pattern, is that they'll line up with Orenstein in order to prevent Connor from taking over the leadership. It is interesting that the grounds that Connor is doing this on is not that Orenstein has legal troubles or all these indictments, but that he hasn't been able to take the majority in all of these years, and so now we need some new energy. That's one thing that he's saying. And I suspect, and the other thing is that Orenstein is apparently taking too much time on his law practice. They all take a lot of time on their various business enterprises and law practice, so I suspect the second gets sort of cut out. But the first is an interesting rationale. Look, we've always wanted to take the legislature, the Senate. We have enough Democrats in the state to do it. We've never been able to do it. Kick this guy out. I just don't think that Connor is going to be the guy that they choose to do that. Now, this may, of course, cause a much larger sort of cataclysmic eruption out of this, and out of this may come a compromise that somebody else becomes the leader besides Marty Connor, and that'll be the big danger for Orenstein.
Legislative Gazette political analyst Dr. Alan Shartok. And that about does it for this week. Join us at the same time next week for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Gallettly.
The program is made possible with grants from the Legislative Gazette, the newspaper about state government. Subscription information available by calling 518-473-6482. And Empire Information Services, serving New York and New England with electronic news release distribution.
The budget axe may fall on 10,000 New York State workers. I'm Dave Gallettly. Coming up on this week's Legislative Gazette, Governor Cuomo shares thoughts on the possibility of layoffs. We'll also look at some power struggles taking place in Albany. Join us each week for the Legislative Gazette.